It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Another UN call for action in Syria. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says urgent action is needed to prevent a massacre of Palestinian refugees at the Yarmouk camp in the Syrian capital, where Islamic State militants have taken control. Mr. Ban called for humanitarian access to Palestinians trapped there. An estimated 18,000 Palestinians were living at the camp in southern Damascus when it was overrun by Islamic State militants last week. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is warning that civilians in Syria and Yemen are, in his words, willfully abandoned to misery. UN correspondent Margaret Bashir has more.
Mr. Ban told reporters the crisis in Yemen has plunged an already very poor country into a severe humanitarian crisis. He said attempts by Houthi rebels to seize more territory violate UN Security Council resolutions. This has led to an escalation in the conflict as a Saudi Arabian-led Arab coalition conducts airstrikes at the request of the beleaguered president, Abdurrabu Mansour Hadi. Mr. Ban said the only solution is a quick return to UN-brokered political negotiations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Somalia's government is placing bounties on the heads of 11 al-Shabaab leaders, including the militant group's top leader and the alleged mastermind of last week's massacre in Kenya. An American health worker infected with Ebola while working in Sierra Leone was released from the National Institutes of Health Hospital in Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. The U.S. aid agency Partners of Health say the man, whose name was not released, was declared free of the disease and allowed to return home. According to the World Health Organization, more than 10,000 people have died from the Ebola virus outbreak. This is VOA News. President Obama is in Panama for a two-day summit of the Americas. During a brief visit to Jamaica on Thursday, President Obama said he will soon make a decision on whether to remove communist Cuba from a list of countries the United States considers to be state sponsors of terrorism.
We want to make sure that, given that this is a powerful tool to isolate those countries that genuinely do support terrorism, that when we make those designations, we've got strong evidence that, in fact, that's the case. And as circumstances change, then that list will change as well.
President Obama is awaiting a recommendation from his aides now that a State Department review of Cuban actions and world affairs is complete. While no formal meeting is planned at the summit in Panama, White House officials say President Obama and Cuban President Raul Castro will interact. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei is demanding Western and UN economic sanctions imposed against Tehran be lifted as soon as final agreement is reached on Iran's nuclear development program. During a speech on Iranian television, the cleric said he neither supports nor opposes the agreement and that he is open to a compromise deal that, in his words, respects Iran's dignity and honor. Taliban militants armed with rocket-propelled grenades and other weapons stormed a court in northern Afghanistan Thursday, killing at least 8 people and wounding another 60. Afghan authorities say they regained control of the court complex in Mazar-e-Sharif after a 6-hour siege. The head of the International Monetary Fund says global growth is moderate and uneven and faces growing risk. The assessment came in a speech in Washington by IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde.
Global recovery continues, but it is moderate and uneven. In too many parts of the world, it is not strong enough. And in too many parts of the world, people don't just feel it.
Christine Lagarde says the global economy grew about 3.4% last year, benefiting from falling oil prices and a strong performance by the U.S. economy, the world's largest. Greece made a debt repayment of $495 million to the International Monetary Fund. The payment will help Greece move closer to securing a final international bailout package and remain in the eurozone. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter arrived in South Korea Thursday, warning that Pyongyang's recent missile tests are a reminder of how dangerous the situation is on the Korean Peninsula. North Korean short-range missiles were launched this week into the sea off North Korea's west coast. North Korea also fired 4 missiles in a similar test last Friday. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 10th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Lagos, Africa's largest city, holds election tomorrow, Saturday, to choose a governor.
If Lagos was a country, it would be the fifth largest country in Africa. It also means that Lagos is, by certain estimates, responsible for perhaps 40-50% of national GDP.
Tuji Lautner is executive director of the West African NGO Network. Nigeria's opposition APC party predicts victory in tomorrow's Lagos gubernatorial election. Some Ebola victims in Liberia fear corruption may swallow up international Ebola aid. And Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir makes final appeal to voters ahead of Monday's presidential election.
When I think about Bashir, I think security. And I think everything nice, I think of Bashir.
That's Sudanese voter Rita Adam Mohamed. Meanwhile, President Bashir has ordered the release from further detention of two senior opposition politicians. And we'll get Congo's take on U.S. President Barack Obama's telephone call last month to President Kabila. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's Lagos isn't just the commercial hub of Nigeria, but also the most popular city in all of Africa. Two men are vying for the state's top job in Saturday's governorship election. Chris Stein reports for VOA from Lagos.
Here's what you get if you're the governor of Lagos State. You get people, millions of them, spread through so many glitzy estates and unplanned neighborhoods that no one knows exactly how many there are. You get a city with towering high-rises and slums built on garbage. And you get to manage what is by itself one of Africa's largest economies, says Tunji Lardner, executive director of the West African NGO Network and a lifelong Lagosian.
If Lagos was a country, it would be the fifth largest country in Africa. It also means that Lagos is, by certain estimates, responsible for perhaps 40-50% of national GDP. It also means, ironically, that some of the wealthiest people in Africa and in Lagos, as well as some of the poorest people in Africa.
Nigeria's political scene was upended late last month when President Goodluck Jonathan lost the national election to Muhammadu Buhari of the opposition All Progressives Congress. It was the first loss by an incumbent president since Nigeria returned to democracy in 1999. Mr. Jonathan's People's Democratic Party is hoping to maintain influence with a win by Jimmy Agbaje, its candidate in the Lagos State Governor's race. Mr. Buhari's party is hoping to further consolidate its power by getting candidate Akinwumi Ambode elected. Whoever wins has big shoes to fill. Lardner credits the state's two most recent governors with cleaning up the streets and building up a tax revenue base that's the best among Nigeria's 36 states. Khadija Sani has benefited from that leadership. She spent most of her life living in Oshodi, home to a popular market and bus station where she sells beverages wholesale. The Oshodi she knew growing up was chaotic and unregulated, but no longer.
Then when we were in primary school in Oshodi, yeah, dog, everybody selling, no control, they just do things the way they like. Smoking, all these things, selling in railways, those things, but thank God, there are many different in Oshodi now.
Not all parts of Lagos have benefited equally. In the Ajigunle neighborhood, people filled in swampland with trash to build ramshackle houses. Tolu Lope Sengosanya runs a resource center for local children. When a fire broke out recently, she says firefighters didn't show up. That's just one way the powers that be have neglected the neighborhood, she says.
We do something and we don't trickle it down to the grassroots. How does this? You fix the main road, you do not fix the inner streets.
It's not just Lagos that's voting on Saturday. Contests for governorships will take place in most of Nigeria's 36 states. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
A spokesman for Nigeria's opposition All Progressives Congress, APC, says the party has momentum on its side ahead of Saturday's gubernatorial election. Shehu Galba says the success of the party in the March 28 presidential election is drawing nationwide support from other opposition parties to the APC in the run-up to the vote. Galba tells reporter Peter Clarty that the APC is ready to capitalize on its success in the recent presidential vote to defeat the ruling People's Democratic Party's gubernatorial candidates across the country.
we cannot be more ready than we are at the moment. Because, look, we are coming from the victory we scored 2 weeks ago, recorded enormous win over the PDP. Now, and from then to now, you can see there has been a lot that is happening. Two things. One is that, look, Nigeria, we are a nation of copycats. People have been trooping into, have been leaving the PDP and coming over to our own party. And we're welcoming them. And that's one. And two, the law enforcement agency who collaborated with the ruling PDP in the last election, they are looking at the face of a new commander-in-chief that is coming into office from May 29th. We expect neutrality. Police, army, all of them. And we don't think anybody will be playing games anymore. Because power has shifted. They have a new commander-in-chief that is coming to take over. I don't think they will toy with their career.
Some supporters of PDP say that the APC supporters are using intimidation and harassment and poaching some of their bigwigs to join the ranks of the APC ahead of the gubernatorial election. What do you say to such criticisms?
No. Let me tell you, APC has no reason to poach now. Eh? What is happening is that people who had never belonged to PDP in their state, there are people who think that there is no oxygen out here because they had been in PDP, not because they believed in what the PDP was doing. And now that PDP has lost power, they are quitting. But we are welcoming them because the thing is that our party represents a change and a new attitude in the affairs of Nigeria. So whoever is making a movement from the rotting old ways of the past, coming over to embrace change, we are welcoming them. We are not intimidating anyone. We have no reason to cajole or harass anybody. They are coming freely on their own, and we welcome them.
Now, what do you say to people that those who are jumping ship at this time from PDP to APC could do the same to APC in the near future because they are practicing stomach politics, and that could be before the APC in the near future? What do you say to that?
Well, there could be a few who would be doing the stomach politics. But the thing is that the thing that has taken place in Nigeria is the revolution without a single shot being fired. So we need everyone on our side. APC represents a new thinking, a new attitude to everything. Look, we are saying we want to remove corruption from Nigeria, insecurity, and the regenerate economy to save jobs. So if people are saying we identify with change, with a Nigeria free of corruption and lack of security, by all means, we welcome them.
Shehu Garba is spokesman for Nigeria's opposition All Progressives Congress Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. Liberia's reputation for graft has international donors and many Liberians concerned that aid money to help the country recover from Ebola may disappear into the maw of corruption. Benny Mushler has more in this report from Monrovia.
The international community has pledged nearly $5 billion to help West Africa fight and recover from the Ebola outbreak. But systemic corruption in Liberia has donors concerned that the people who need the money most won't see it. Liberia Deputy Information Minister Isaac Jackson says his government has taken these concerns into account and the international community should be reassured.
We've been able to put in place some of the best measures in accounting for the Ebola money. As we speak, the Minister of Finance and Development Planning, Honorable Amara Kone, has challenged all ministries and agencies that receive Ebola money to carry out proper accountability.
Many Liberians, however, remain skeptical. The country is notorious for corruption, which keeps almost every part of society in its grip. Even President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's own family has been tainted by graft allegations. Now the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has sent an auditing team to Liberia to look into Ebola projects. This pleases many Liberians, who think the team will hold the Liberian government accountable. The U.S. effort, however, has a different mission, says Doug Mercado, the leader of USAID's special response in the fight against Ebola in West Africa. He says it is neither a financial audit nor an audit of the Liberian government.
This is a standard routine audit that USAID regularly conducts in any kind of situation throughout the world. It's a performance audit, just to work with our partner to make sure that the program they ran with our funding was achieving the objectives that we set out to achieve.
Mercado did not say which particular projects in Liberia will be monitored. U.S. assistance to combat Ebola in West Africa, administered through USAID, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and the U.S. military, stands at more than $1.3 billion. Silas Yacor is the founder of SDI, a local research institute that has for years monitored misuse of money in Liberia's mining, forestry, and agriculture sectors. He says a financial audit of U.S. assistance would be very welcome because it's not always the Liberian government that wastes money.
We have seen a lot of waste in the natural resource sector, U.S. aid money going to U.S. Agencies working in the natural resource sector, millions of dollars, and we are seeing extremely limited impacts on the ground. So we are very concerned that a lot of the money that was appropriated by the U.S. government for Ebola response could end up similarly, where it leaves nothing behind in the public health sector in Liberia.
According to Siakor, the U.S. government has spent about $25 million to support communities in sustainably using their forests. Given that amount, he has seen very little improvement for the communities where the aid money was aimed. Benno Müchler for VOA News, Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 10th. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir made his final appeal to voters on Thursday evening with a major rally in the capital, Khartoum. With the opposition boycotting the April 13th vote, Mr. Bashir is the assumed victor. But that did not stop his supporters from giving a full-throated endorsement. Viewer's Gabe Jaslow was there in Khartoum and has this report.
Khartoum National Stadium is packed with flag-waving supporters of President Omar al-Bashir for his final campaign speech ahead of elections which begin Monday. The country's opposition has boycotted the vote over complaints of a closing political space and the continued suppression of critical voices, which means an assured victory for Mr. Bashir and his National Congress Party. The supporters here are unfazed, like Rita Adan Mohammed, who told me Mr. Bashir is a leader who can protect the country.
When I think about Bashir, I think security and I think everything nice I think of Bashir.
In his speech, Mr. Bashir trumpeted Sudan's contribution to the Saudi-led military operations against rebels in Yemen and promised to continue to push for a new Sharia-based constitution. Days ahead of the vote, Mr. Bashir, the candidate, is pressing his case hard, even if the outcome is inevitable. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Khartoum.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir Thursday ordered the release from further detention of two senior opposition politicians ahead of Monday's Sudan presidential election. Farouk Abu Issa and Ami Maki Madani were jailed since last December after they signed an agreement to unite all Sudanese opposition groups. The government accused the two of running a terrorist organization and inciting war against the state. President Bashir had said he would release them if they apologized. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal said the two were released after they apologized indirectly and promised never to join any plan to overthrow the government by force.
We are releasing them that because we are going to the elections, and the president also says that after the election immediately, we will again start the national dialogue. And this is improving the environment for the dialogue and for the election and this. By that, there is no one detained so far in Sudan.
Well, Mr. Minister, these two people were arrested and detained because your government said they signed this agreement with the rebel group, which you felt was a threat to national security. And you have said if they apologized, did they apologize at all?
Yes, they actually made an apology, an indirect apology, and this is accepted by the president. And they promised not at all to join the opposition or to call for toppling the regime by force or to cease some spread stimulating the army.
Elections are coming up. I think it's on the 13th of this month. The European Union has said that there's no way that this election can be free and fair.
In fact, actually, it's not true. Actually, now the parties which are participating in these elections by far are more than those who are participating in 2010. More than 45 parties are participating in the elections. I think the election for us is a constitution and a law which obliges the government to go for the election. That is why we are going for the election.
So, Mr. Minister, does it not concern your government the fact, we hear that even the African Union is not sending observers?
African Union are sending observers. The African Union is not against the elections. The Arab League are sending. It's only the European communities are against the elections. We don't know why. Why should we perform the elections?
Another criticism that the European Union made is that President Bashir did not go further enough to make sure that the national dialogue that he has been promoting takes place.
Actually, the president every day and now is talking about the national dialogue and persuading others to join the national dialogue. And we spent a whole year preparing for this. The opposition, actually, they are not going to join it. And we talked to the rebels outside, and they agreed to join the national dialogue. And we wait for this more than actually 2 or 3 months. And now, and we think that the elections wouldn't stop in face of the national dialogue.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The government of the Democratic Republic of Congo has been giving its own interpretation of a telephone conversation late last month between U.S. President Barack Obama and President Joseph Kabila. A White House release said Mr. Obama emphasized the importance of timely, credible, and peaceful elections that respect the DRC's constitution. Mr. Kabila is prohibited by the Constitution to seek a third term, and the opposition has accused him of maneuvering to stay in power. But Information Minister Lambert Mende says President Kabila has always maintained that he will respect the Constitution.
The release from White House, I have read that President Obama congratulates the counterpart about the democratic process in Congo and the economic success of his government, and encourage the to go beyond and bring the people of Congo to the election that will respect the constitution and the human rights in the Congo. And he emphasized this problem of APDLR and encouraged President Kabila to cooperate with the UN forces to disarm these Rwandese rebels, and they promised an assistance to the Congolese army in doing that.
I had a chance to speak with an opposition person, Mr. Martin Fayulu.
James, the opposition, myself, you, we were not when the two heads of state spoke. So please, let's rely on the communique given by White House. I don't feel in the need of committing it now 2 weeks later. We are mocking our leaders.
As I was saying, I spoke to an opposition leader, Martin Fayulu, saying that the opposition wants a timetable for election. That's one.
The timetable is there, James. The commission gave a timetable. It is there. We are waiting to accomplish it.
Is your president now, has he declared that he will run or he will not run?
No, in the timetable, it is not time for president or anybody to declare his candidacy. We are not in a jungle. It is a timetable where they write in this date, candidate will say they are candidate or not. This time has not come. It is after 1 year and a half. So why are we talking about it? Let's wait. When this time of giving candidacy came, you will see who are candidates or not.
In President Obama's telephone call to President Kabila, I think President Obama expressed the need for the DRC election to respect the Constitution. And the Constitution says the president cannot run for another term.
You are turning around, James. Obama said he needs the election be conducted following the Constitution. Kabila is saying, before even Obama knows that there will be elections, Kabila is saying each day that election will be led following the Constitution. Where is the problem, my dear James? Where is the problem? The two leaders are speaking the same language. What is the fact? When Kabila said that he will change the Constitution, what is the event? What happened? He doesn't understand.
Lambert Mende is Information Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Gambia are Africa's most improved team, while Liberia has slipped by the widest margin, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Algeria's Desert Fox are 21st and are Africa's highest-ranked side. African champions Ivory Coast are 23rd, Ghana 26th, Tunisia 30th, Senegal 36th, and Cape Verde Islands 37th. Guinea is 41st, Nigeria 45th, Cameroon 48th, and the Republic of Congo 49th. Meanwhile, Egypt plays Burundi as Cameroon face Zimbabwe in weekend men's 2015 All-Africa Games qualifiers. Zambia host Nigeria, Ivory Coast engage Burkina Faso, as South Africa host Sudan, Ghana engage Mozambique, and Senegal host Mali. Elsewhere, defending champions Cameroon host Ethiopia as Tanzania plays Zambia in women's All-Africa Games qualifiers. Ivory Coast face Guinea-Bissau, Zimbabwe engage Ghana, South Africa encounter Botswana, Nigeria tackle Mali, while Senegal host Egypt. In rugby, South Africa's Orchard Primary School in Orange Farm near Johannesburg make their debut at a one-day international under-12 rugby tournament in Monaco tomorrow, Saturday. The youngsters, who are predominantly from underprivileged backgrounds in Alexandra Township north of Johannesburg, got a once-in-a-lifetime pep talk from President Jacob Zuma prior to their first time in an aeroplane making their first trip out of Johannesburg.
Sport is an important thing in the life of a person, a community, in the life of a country, in the life of the world. Sport widens your horizon of knowledge, creates social interaction, friends with the world. We call people like ourselves the ambassadors of our nation. You are like a South African team, not just Orchard's school. That's why we're here. That's why the minister is here. So I'm here to encourage you to do your best. I can promise. If you win the tournament, we'll come back with the cup. Minister and myself will come to Orchard's primary school to celebrate with you. Agreed? Did I promise? Come back with his head.
That was Jacob Zuma, South Africa's head of state, speaking at the presidential guest house in the South African capital, Tshwane. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Bloemfontein, Mangaung, Free State Province in South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 10th.
This is Bapa Adamare Fonda from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. God bless Nigeria, first in history. We have experienced a free and fair election. The chance ahead, the incoming President General Muhammadu Buhari retired, is the rehabilitation and reconstruction of the strangulated, mutilated, distorted, and defied Nigeria by the past regime. Thank you. This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That is it for this Friday, April 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.